Cannonball.
An old cannonball is going to be passing you like you weren't even there.
Anyone can enter and anything goes in a squealing, smashing outlaw race across America.
I want to make a little bet on a Trans-American Grand Prix. Can you handle $20,000?
Gentlemen know each other, don't you? Mr. Redman, Mr. Buckman.
I believe we run into each other once or twice.
It's a cross-country demolition derby.
I mean to win this one. And if you so much as come within 100 miles of me, you're going to wind up in my tire tracks right up your...
The winner gets $100,000. The losers keep what's left of their cars.
Nice, huh?
Get me the highway patrol.
We're trying to get a word here with Brad Phillips, organizer of the race. Brad, tell me, your race has been called an outlaw sporting event. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, the police and safety officials around the country get upset because our drivers tend to exceed the speed limits.
One speeding ticket and you're back in prison.
Oh, God, there's trouble.
It's a freeway free-for-all that hits with the impact of a head-on collision.
But this car could beat anything on the road.
This car, the winner.
Cannonball.
This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
Would that be we've got to watch what we say now too, because if I monetize this and YouTube doesn't like it, they're going to take the monetization off, and I won't be able to get that Taco Bell taco.
They can suck it.
Way to go, Scott. There you go, Frank. YouTube, Scott. The commentary of the individuals of this show do not reflect the actual opinions of the show owners.
It was from me, and I haven't done an episode in almost a year, so.
Here we are, another edition of the Spoiler Room, another big 4-0 special. If you haven't caught our recent episodes, shame on you. We had a great 100th episode. We did an episode on Kubo. And today, though, we are heading back to 1976 to talk Carquake, a.k.a. Cannonball, starring the David Carradine and directed by Paul Bartel. Should I read the synopsis on YouTube, or do one of you want to give the synopsis to this movie? Because it's so deep, and it's so, you know...
There are cars.
Well,
cars happen.
This is not the Gumball Rally, but it's based off of basically the same thing. You've got an underground trans-American race for $100,000, and it's a secret race that goes from coast to coast, and anyone can be part of it. And so we have David Carradine, who is Coy Cannonball Buckman, who had a unfortunate history, and he's an ex-con, and he's trying to redeem himself and his racing career that he once had by winning this. And he faces his arch-nemesis, Cade Redman, played by Bill McKenney, and along the way we meet another group of cast of characters in humorous and actually some dark scenes that we get in this unusual film. No, this is not Cannonball Run, though Cannonball Run was kind of influenced by this. Cannonball, let's start with Don. We've got Don in the room tonight, and Glenn Bittner is joining us, as well as Scotty D. So we got a great Spoiler Room crew here. Don, what'd you think about Cannonball?
I was a little surprised. I liked it. But then again, I like Death Race 2002.
Which came out the year before, starring David Carradine.
Yes.
Same director, too. Yeah.
Same director.
Yep. So, it's... I liked it. I thought I thought it was pretty fun. There was that whole... we've always had a thing, society has always had this thing about racing, and, you know, 50s, 60s, it was the drag racing, and then apparently in the mid-70s, there was this thing about, there was this actual, real, illegal car race happening across the continent, and that's what these things are based on, and then Cannonball Run spoofs, but, yeah, I thought it was pretty neat. One of the things I like about it is, yeah, sure, you've got one notably ridiculously ditzy blonde woman in here, but for the most part, the women in this movie kick ass.
Yeah. They do. Yeah. This was my first time watching it, and yeah, it caught me that, holy crap, the women are stronger in here for the most part, for most of them, most of the characters, than the men are actually in this movie. So I liked it. Was this your first time seeing it for the show?
It was my first time seeing it. I'd seen a Gunball Rally back in April, and I liked that one too. But I've watched Death Race a lot.
Yes.
Death Race 2000, I should specify.
So have I. So, well, though there was Death Race as well, which is another one with an illegal car race, so a little bit different. But Glenn, how about you, sir? Cannonball, what are your initial thoughts with this film?
There it is.
There it is.
I missed that. I missed hearing that sigh.
I remember seeing this many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. And boy, were we this easy to entertain back then? Were we?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I'm guessing yes. Now, it's not an awful movie, mostly. It's just these are some really bad drivers who are supposed to be really good drivers.
Yes.
But they're awful. But there's a particular scene in the movie that shows that normal drivers are really, really bad.
They can't
avoid a massive pileup that has flames 50 feet high. So if that's the average driver who just still drives their car into a flaming truck, then maybe Coy is just a miracle of modern driving ability, because which he's not. So just there's really not a lot of good driving action.
Yeah.
In this, there's a lot of occasionally I'm gonna hit you from behind while this idiot sings bad songs on his guitar, and someone gets mad at him, and then of course, then inevitably, how many times did freaking David Carradine crash, wipe out, get his car broken in some way, yet somehow? How bad was everyone else? Though the women in the van, who, you know, were great, but you see them like twice after the start of the movie, and at the end they're like there. It's like they should have gotten, with how much time Coy delayed, they should have been there like a day ahead of him. A whole day. So I just, you know, and maybe it's because I'm such a fan of the original Cannonball Run, which is, again, that one also doesn't have tons of great driving action, but that one was comedy, which this one really wasn't. I mean, they were trying to do kind of a serious movie here. And I know Dawn said, you know, how she likes Death Race 2000, which I also really enjoy that movie. And I think the problem is that this movie took itself too seriously.
Yeah,
I can see that.
And it really, they should have either gone for more of an action-y type, let's have lots of driving stuff, or gone a bit more of the campy. But they tried to do like this serious, hey, drive across the country movie, which just did not work for me.
Yeah, well, it's funny because looking at the genre,
no, it wasn't funny. That's
no. What I find funny is the fact that it's deemed as action, comedy, crime, drama, thriller,
Well, that's because it's IMDb. That's because IMDb, they have no idea. They just like, I mean, we've seen that yellow ticket stub as the icon for that site for like over 20 years now. And let's be honest, it should just be a guy leaving a movie theater just shrugging. That should be the icon for IMDb. Like, I don't know. We used to have a pretty good like handle on things before we let all of our users decide our content. Now, figured out that it might be more affordable, but our users really don't know shit. So,
yeah, IMDb, I'm not sure where it's going. Scotty D, how about you? Your feelings? We've got one who enjoyed it and one who didn't. Which camp are you in?
Oh, I enjoyed it. But you know, here's the thing: is that I enjoyed it while I agree with pretty much everything Glenn said. Is it because, and I don't know what it is. You know, first of all, I love these. Right, everybody knows, right, like, well, not everybody knows. That's stupid. But like, a lot of people know that I love, you know, Roger Corman. My favorite era of Roger Corman isn't even his directing; it's the producing he did in the 70s, like say, like from 1970 to 1983 with New World Pictures. That's my favorite era for him, and he cranked out so many of these films. And ordinarily, I would have such a problem with a film that changed tone so much. I would accuse it of not knowing what it wanted to be. This time, I don't know if they knew what it wanted to be, but the result is so consistently disarming. Because this film starts out with a pre-title sequence where, like, a nightmare sequence, and you're just like, holy God, I thought I was going to see a comedy here. I mean, it's this really surreal and violent sequence. And then you're kind of like, oh, goofy people are, you know, joining up and everything like that. And then it'll switch again. And then it'll make you forget it a little bit by having, like, a little fun bit and everything like that. And then it'll change again. And then finally there's, like, this bit at the end, which I'm sure we're going to get into, that is just so violent and so graphic. They try to placate it later on by saying 17 people in the hospital from this event that happens later in the movie. I'm like, yeah, and what? Like 32 in the morgue? So, I mean, because it's just this, I mean, it's really disturbing. But I actually kind of liked that it constantly kept guessing. The bad drivers, yeah, I'm expecting that. You know, I don't know if the cameras were overcranked like they were in Death Race 2000. That was like one of the things of that movie where that everybody was pretty much just driving like 30, 40 miles an hour, but they cranked the cameras so much that it looked like they were going faster. This one, I think they were just kind of poor drivers. But, you know, I love David Carradine. Let's not forget, David Carradine got famous because of a show that claimed that he was the greatest kung fu master in the world, which he's decent, but he isn't the greatest kung fu master in the world. Never was. I don't even think he would claim that. So the fact that it's a movie that says he's like one of the greatest drivers, but he isn't, I'm like, eh. That's Carradine. You know? It's a fun movie. It's a fun exploitation film. And it's one of those films from the 70s that will really take a lot of people by surprise, because once you're kind of used to what this movie is, it turns into something different.
Yeah, it really goes all over the place, all over the road, if you will. Aha! prepare yourself. I've got a few more of them.
Oh, boy.
And I'm not sorry about that. It is really weird in tone, because, yeah, I was watching it, and I'm like, wait, comedy? Because I saw it on IMDb, and you get that opening sequence, which is that dream sequence where he gets shot in the head, and his car flips over, and they blow up, and it's just like, holy crap. And then we've got goofy characters who are getting ready for this race. And what I thought was interesting is I enjoyed it, but didn't as well. I mean, I found it amusing, but at the same time, I'm going, this really isn't that well put together as far as the story goes. Because, I mean, I understand it's a simple concept, but, yeah, I mean, we get this opening sequence where we get the dream, so then he wakes up and they kind of allude to him possibly being the cop, David Carradine at first, you know, and he gets his dream. And then we cut to a scene with Dick Miller and someone putting plastic explosive under someone's car. We're not quite sure whose. And then we cut to a guy who's picking up someone's car for their home. And you're like, okay, I kind of get that. But you really don't get any motivation immediately why they're doing this at first. I mean, I know you know the title of the movie, but it's just, it was really kind of felt disjointed a bit. And they blow through kind of the introductions to the characters, I thought, including our villain, who at first you think it's the German chap, played by James Keach, who isn't the villain. Cade Redmond is, played by Bill McKinney. Glenn, what'd you think of Bill McKinney's character as, I guess, the villain in this, the arch nemesis of Coy Cannonball Buckman? He just, what the hell? What's with his character?
Yeah, they start him off as this kind of just kind of a dick. But then, like, partway through the movie, it's all of a sudden like, hey, you know, I could just murder him by, you know, just constantly trying to, you know, run his car off the road. And, I mean, it just, it turned really dark in some ways where it's this, you know, his character didn't start off as, it was kind of an ass. Oh, I'll throw the jack out of your car. You know,
yeah,
but it just progressively got worse, and then, of course, at the end, where you know, David Carradine is just like, I'll just let him get murdered, and instead, by just well, I guess he drove himself off the bridge.
I was gonna say he didn't actually murder him. He just pulled the speed, and he got enough speed to get
to get that jump. Well, whereas you know the other guy pulled an Illinois Nazi off the bridge.
Nice.
But yeah, I just you know, and I don't quite understand why he had the woman and the guy in his car.
Well, they said they were paying for his trip.
Yeah, which to me it's like you know it just seemed like. He's the type of guy who'd just be like, fuck it, I'm just going to mug someone and be done with it.
Scott, how'd you feel about this villain? It felt like they didn't know what to do with him.
Oh, I liked the villain. And I kind of liked that there was a statement early on that the old lady there says that, you know, I'm still pulling this guy's strings. The person in the back seat is, you know... in charge of the front seat. And the way, like I said before about the tone of this film, there's so much that keeps you guessing because you just like, so like, shit, I don't know where this movie's going. You know, that you're kind of thinking like, maybe she is until you find out, oh, no, she isn't. He's kicked a little old lady out of a car. What an asshole. But I mean, it's like, no, he's just this, you know, he's this really, you know, brutal person. I got that from the beginning. I kind of got that his character and David Carradine's character and all that. The actual glory days of nice, sponsored, safe racing were long behind them. This is something. Right. This is outlaw territory. This is a place where people get injured, people get killed. And they have everybody, and each of these people, probably more so than anybody else in the race, these two people have seen blood in their lives and probably have drawn blood before. In the last couple weeks, also saw another racing movie, Jack Hill's film Pit Stop. And that also was about this, if anybody ever gets a chance to see it, it's also about like this weird kind of down and dirty outlaw racing where, you know, the results can be life or death. So I didn't really have a problem with this bad guy character. He kind of, first of all, I think it's kind of funny that this is came before all the Hal Needham films, and the guys actually kind of looked like Jerry Reed. But he's like, no, I'd like, nope, this is our villain of the piece and everything like that. I will say this. He did have, as one of the passengers in his car, one of my favorite character actors. And I love seeing this guy. I hope I'm not changing the subject too much here. I don't know what it is. Every time this guy shows up in a movie, I'm like, oh, Garrett Graham is in this. I'm always so happy to see Garrett Graham. I don't care if it's in a great movie like Phantom of the Paradise or a shitty movie like Chud 2. I just love seeing Garrett Graham is one of those actors. If you don't know him by name, he's somebody where when he comes up on screen, you're going to be like, that guy, I know that guy.
Just like Dick Miller, who's
just like Dick Miller, exactly. But you know, without, you know, Garrett Graham's a little bit younger than Dick there, but you know, Nick Miller got his start, I think, in the 50s, and Garrett was, I think, still a young actor in the 70s there. And but I mean, he's just been in everything, and I just love seeing him. Every time I see him in a movie or on a TV show, I'm always happy to see Garrett Graham. So I'm like, okay, every scene with Garrett Graham is going to be awesome, because I know he's going to do some weird ass accent and totally, but be completely committed to that character, and he always is. So I'd love that guy. He's one of my favorite character actors.
And he was in this one as well, where he's the southern guy, where this is pretty advanced technology. Somehow in this car suddenly appeared the transmission and recording equipment for him to sing across the country with different radio stations.
You know, 70s CVs could do anything.
Don, what'd you
think? Quack,
quack, quack. This is Lucky Duck. Anyway, there's another truck movie from that era, or a little bit older. But, Don, what'd you think of Kate Redmond, our quote-unquote villain, and his passengers?
You know, I guess I didn't see... I guess I viewed him as... And I understand he was the villain of the piece, but I viewed him as more of the rival, and rather than the villain. I saw actually Dick Miller's character as the villain of the piece.
Oh, sure.
And that was my perception. I thought of him as an angry, violent rival for sure. Mm-hmm. And there was definitely, Garrett Graham, definitely a shining star in this movie. He was violent. He was annoying. He was a bully. Cade Redmond and Coy obviously had some
history. Yeah.
History. And do I remember? And I wish I would have written this down. But at one point when Coy was somewhere at one of his many car crashes, somebody asked him if he bit. Was it Cade in the ass during one of their races? Did I completely misunderstand that?
I think I remember something like that, but I don't think they mean like he actually bit him. I think it was more the hit his car with the back of Cade's car with his car, possibly. Because if it was sponsored racing, that would have been
That would have been frowned upon. Yeah.
So would actually biting his ass.
So would actually. Yeah.
And if that was if it was literal, that should have been the pre-title sequence.
Exactly. Oh my gosh.
So yeah, Garrett Graham was one of the lighter moments. So we have Cade, but Cade's not the only darker character. You brought it up. Dick Miller playing Bunny Buckman, who is Coy's brother. Who really wants Coy to win because he's got money down with he made a bet with a loan shark who is another really scary character, Terry McMillan, isn't it? Carl Gottlieb playing Terry, was that the bad? That was the rich guy, wasn't it?
The real bad guy there who was, you know, the guy who was playing the piano and everything.
Yeah.
That was Paul Bartel.
Oh, that was Paul Bartel. Okay, I'm sorry.
That was the director. Yeah. It's so weird because for once he wasn't. He usually does his, you know, very sophisticated voice in a movie. If you ever see him, like, in, you know, Rock and Roll High School or Eating Raoul, he's always doing that voice. And because he wasn't here, I'm like, oh, he's actually, like, a tough guy in this movie.
Okay, so that was Paul Bartel. Okay, it was hard to identify because they only have pictures and such of
their
older selves.
And there's so many people in this movie, too.
There's so many people, but... So you've got Coy, who's the good guy, and we know he's the good guy because he wears pink and shows his chest a lot. David Carradine. That didn't work.
David Carradine is kind of like Julie Strain. He won't take a movie unless he shows off his chest.
I didn't know which distracted me more, his chest or the pink jacket he continually wear with the ascot, which he had to keep putting on after he crashed many times. But his brother was just this kind of darker guy here, and he's in for money into this loan shark. So you get kind of these moments where you get the car races, and as we mentioned, a little lighter moments where we've got the girls in the van, and they're giving the one guy the hard time in the Lincoln, you know, which is kind of a comedic rivalry there, which was a lighter moment. And then you get this moment where he's playing this shark and he just has Coy's brother get the crap beat out of him because he owes him money. And I'm like, holy crap, did this just get like Godfather like? Because he's playing the piano and, you know, Scott, what'd you think of that mixture, you know, with those two characters? Those were, like Dawn said, possibly our actual villains?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have, like, there's, like, kind of, like, an A villain and a B villain to this movie. And you kind of think that the A villain is going to be Carradine's nemesis, because Carradine's the main character. But actually, the A villain kind of tends to be Paul Bartel and the brother, who is a sleazeball, but doesn't always seem... You can see... Even if you weren't related to the guy, you could see how you could kind of fall into his charms. It's Dick Miller. He's a charming guy. You know, he's a charming guy. And Paul Bartel, Dick Miller was this kind of person who was always trying to scheming and everything like that. But let's face it, we always knew that he was a sleazeball and wasn't really organized. If he was organized, he wouldn't be so deep to the mob anyway. But Paul Bartel was just this very businesslike person who says wasn't in it for any actual cruelty. He views life and death as a business. These are the costs of doing business. And he was a pretty brutal character. Did you catch all the there's all these little tiny people that pop up in this movie? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you wanted to talk about that later or not.
I was noticing there were a number of people that just make these guest appearances.
And you see, like, you'll see, like, Paul Bartel chatting with a couple mafiosos and stuff like that in one scene. And, like, I'm like, well, and according to the IMDb, one of them is an uncredited Sylvester Stallone, which I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. Well, what I did know right away from seeing the guy, I'm like, holy shit, that's Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, I saw his name show up in the credits, too, at the end of the movie, and I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, he was sitting right there with him because he had the same, you know, haircut and beard and everything that he did when he actually popped up in Taxi Driver in the same year. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a lot of film, behind-the-scenes film people that pop up in this movie. You got Joe McBride, you've got Jonathan Kaplan, Don Simpson, who co-wrote this movie and was very famous as being one half of the Simpson-Bruckheimer team later on. Mm-hmm. You know, all these Joe Dante, Roger Corman himself, all these people kind of like pop up, and they're all like actual film people who, of course, Corman being the head of the New World Empire and other people who had worked for the New World Empire at one point in time. And a couple of them are actually working with Paul Bartel and looking just as, well, now let's face it, they looked like they were just having lunch. But Paul Bartel was really...
I was going to say, they were just kind of there. You know, but his character, yeah, is, you make a good point, Don, and he is the true villain, really, him and him, Benny in this, but then you get this confusing part with him, and Glenn, I want to get your opinion first on it. I mean, we have, as we established now, you know, a villain and actually, you know, the alpha villain, which was Paul Bartel's character there. And then we get Betty hiring this hitman, and I think they were trying to make it funny that the hitman was going after the wrong guy, but that was actually really disturbing in this movie. It ended up creating one of the darker moments, didn't it? Did the whole storyline with the assassin, was that just confusing to you as well, or was I missing something?
I don't know if they really know anything that was really going on in the movie. To me, it feels like they had several different script writers, and they said, you're going to handle this part, you're going to handle this part, you're going to handle this part. And then they said, okay, I just tape these pages together, and that's what we're going to do. But, I mean, yeah, it looked like they were trying to make it like, oh, isn't this funny? He just murdered the wrong guy. Isn't that funny? Dude shot in the head, he's dead. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? Cody's girlfriend's in the hospital now. You know, the one who was supposed to keep him out of trouble because she's his parole officer. Isn't that funny? Isn't that funny? Isn't that funny? Look at that. This guy's dead. Who knows how many people died in that massive explosion car crash collision thing?
Well, first our crack assassin goes after Koi incorrectly the first time and gets his butt handed to him by Kane.
Yes.
Because he tries to go all Kane Kung Fu on him, but it looked a little rusty there for Mr. Carradine. But then our assassin goes after him again in this elaborate scheme of jacking up a car and crawling underneath it with his sniper rifle and shooting at the same car that he was just told earlier that his brother, you know, that he was supposed to let win, not kill. And then, yes, they create this really amazing looped crash of all these people. Boy, was that funny. Don, that assassin storyline, isn't that just a bit odd?
Yes.
It was good. I'm just not the only one. I was just making sure I didn't miss something because I was like, we didn't get really an explanation. I'm like, okay, is he mistaking it on purpose? Do you think they were trying to go for the ha-ha, he's shooting the wrong guy? Or what do you think they were trying to go for with that whole assassin angle?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
I know that I'm not sure what that whole sequence was supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm.
It was dark and horrific, and my first thought when I saw the van full of mannequins pour out all over the road was, oh my God, this is going to be bad. And there's no way around it. And, yeah, there was no humor there.
Yeah, and like you said, the first time I could kind of see where he's getting his butt kicked, I'm like, okay. But then we get to that scene, and it's just like, holy balls. It's like his buddy Zippo, who is driving in the same car as Cannon, which another motivation that didn't quite makes sense, saying one way or the other, Cannonball's going to cross the line, but I'm sitting here going, they're going to know you're not Cannonball because they recognize his face, so why the two cars? I couldn't get that.
Well, the kid Zippo had some serious identity problems going on there.
Yeah, yeah, he did, which gets kind of explained a little bit. And it also fills into that backstory of Koi, who actually is a good guy because he covered for Zippo, the lighter, which he does become a lighter later. Oh, sorry.
Jesus.
I'm sorry. Was that bad taste?
What was the bad taste? Was the Andrew Dice Clay O?
Sorry. He did get Cal on fire, but the Zippo character was, yeah, he was odd, this identity crisis guy and running the same car in the race, and he was actually ahead of our hero and the girlfriend. And Scott, what'd you think of Zippo, the lost Marx brother?
You knew that this was going to be a tragic character in one way or the other from the beginning. He's too sweet. He's too innocent for this thing. And he's too dumb. No, that's true. He's just a dumb character. I mean, he's something like out of a Steinbeck story. And then they kind of get into where she kind of confides in Cannonball later there and says, like, you know, he needs to get out of this race. He doesn't know who he is anymore. Mm-hmm. And there was like a lot of stuff like, yeah, he's really displacing himself into the persona of his friend. And so you knew things were going to – either he was going to turn bad or things were going to go bad for him. And things went bad for him. He was kind of the sacrifice. And that was really tragic. And then, as has been touched upon by his wonderfully played character, I want to say. You know, let me just double check it so I get that Archie Hahn did a great job in that role. But then, as both Glenn and Dawn have touched upon, they have this car pileup, which, according to the IMDb, apparently David Carradine tried to talk to part of Paul Bartel about and said, "This is too much." And I know, you know, you can see what they did is like, you know, all there were so many car movies in the 70s. All these car movies. I mean, this was a follow up to Death Race 2000, kind of, but also it was also kind of a precursor to the much more fun Eat My Dust and Grand Theft Auto from the same studio. Of course, we had tons of stuff from other studios that had mixed tragedy and comedy, like Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, for instance, which is a great movie. But you knew what they were saying, like New World Pictures exploitation. We're going to have a giant car pileup, and that's going to be our centerpiece. But David Carradine, according to IMDb, tried to talk to Paul Bartel and said, "This is too much. It's not going to play right," and it doesn't. I will defend a lot of things in this movie, but I will say that this sequence, A, what you say is true. The motivation doesn't really make a whole lot of sense at the very beginning. Yeah. It really doesn't. And then when it happens, I'm just like, oh, my God. I mean, it's one of those sequences that you really can't get over in a movie because, as I said earlier, they said, you know, oh, there were 17 people put in the hospital. And now we know two people die because of the ones we see on screen. You know, we see the Zippo character and the actual assassin die. Show's called Spoiler Room, guys. It's your fault. I mean, several of these cars burst into flames, like right in the driver's seat and everything like that. There is no way that there aren't multiple fatalities on top of that in this case. I mean, I don't care how they – I mean, this isn't a freaking G.I. Joe episode. Like, oh, Duke's in a coma. Like, no. This is a really – I mean, this is one of the most horrific things. You know, 4 years after that, there was an even – I mean, because it can be done comedically.
Yeah.
One of the greatest comedies – I think. I mean, one of my personal favorite comedies was released 4 years after this, The Blues Brothers.
Yep.
Got, you know, referenced earlier this show. There's an even bigger car pileup played much funnier because it was knew what it was going for at that point. This is just this really awful, brutal sequence, and it kind of makes you not like almost anybody in the race.
Yeah.
For putting this many people in danger. I mean, that's a lot of innocent people. And it's one of those sequences that it's just like, you know, there's always like a little one moment that it's hard to get over in a film. And I will say this, as spectacular for the budget as that pileup was, dramatically speaking, it was really hard to get beyond that. Even as a fan of this movie, I can say that.
Well, the assassination was just brutal too. I mean, the way it was depicted in that, it was like holy crap. I mean, you know, they show him getting hit in the head and the car flipping, and then, you know, Coy's girlfriend laying there just broke up. You know, and the kids in the Corvette, I think the line was meant to be kind of maybe haha, but like you said, this pileup is too extreme, and maybe I took her out, but they pick up his girlfriend, and they're driving away, and suddenly another car crashes, and they're like, oh, should we go back and help? And they're like, no, we've got to get her to the hospital. And I'm like, yeah, you're trying to get away from this massive pile of death. And it just, yeah, that whole sequence, Carradine's right. It doesn't play right, especially since I think just before that, don't we get the death of the villain too, or was that after?
I think it was just before. I think it was just before it, you know? It should be just before it because it's a bigger spectacle, the actual, like, special effects-wise, is the pileup. So
yeah,
I would imagine so. But, you know, like, go ahead.
I was just going to say, because we've gotten the comedic moments. Like the I guess the lighter part besides the Western, you know, singer in the car is we do get the girls in the van who get maybe two scenes, and the guy in the Lincoln who's in someone else's Lincoln who really he's going to take it in an illegal race across country and not think he's not going to damage it. You know,
well, that was one of the more comedic elements. That was one of the lighter elements of the story.
You know, and you get moments like that, though, and you get that really pitiful convenience store fight between Cade and Coy, which I was like, this is sad. This is like two drunks trying to go at it.
Well, gee, I wonder why.
I wonder. But you get these moments where you can tell it's trying to be comedic, and then you get this car crash. And then it's like 5 minutes later, you're getting to the end of the movie. You're still on the car crash. I mean, your brain, because that thing is such depicted, just the tone in that. I think that really did just put the brakes on the movie to where it was kind of going where everybody's getting to New York. Yes, thank you. I told you I had a number of them.
Well, you know, but there are good characters in the movie. Mm-hmm. And what the weird thing is, if you don't mind me going to this spot in the movie now, I don't know.
Go ahead. Where are you going?
But there are good movies, and the people in the movie, and the movie is ultimately optimistic and hopeful at the end, which is weird, because who gets rewarded? It is the Robert Carradine character and his person. They saw this horrible thing. They didn't think, oh, let's just, like, drop her off at the ER. Da, 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 da. No, they were sitting there with her for a while and everything like that, and they were ready to forget about the race. Oh, we won't win it anyway. And they had pretty, you know, they had a youthful naivete to themselves, but they also had a decent heart. Like, you know, they were the people who, no, they looked out for this. They saw this woman. They said, no, we can't leave her on the road. We have to get her to a hospital. They got her to a hospital. He talked about wanting to actually, you know, go run for office and, you know, not be for power, but just, you know, because I think it can make a difference and all that stuff. You know, this was your hope. This is the young people are the future character, and it was the good character. It was the pure character. And what happens in the end, after everybody's done with their infighting, there's litters of corpses and everything, they're the ones who are ultimately rewarded in this story.
Yeah, you're right. And that's Robert Carradine's character, Jim, and is that Belinda Balowski playing his girlfriend?
I believe so.
Yeah, who will be familiar to folks, horror fans, mm-hmm. as well as fans of Gremlins. Who, you're right, those two characters, out of all of them, are the characters who really are just going along for the ride, and, you know, they're not really into it. And
no, they're the innocent people. They're the innocents of the story, and they actually, well, you know, more so than Zippo, I would say, because they're not touched by this life so much. And what happens? They're the ones who come out on top.
Although they do steal a fan belt. Oh, my God. Glenn, what'd you think of the two kind of hippie characters? Would you agree they're kind of the most innocent and probably good characters in this movie who probably have the best motivation for being in the race?
I guess. I mean, they're definitely the least evil of anyone. I mean, they really don't do anything that causes massive destruction and stuff like that, aside from, I mean, who knows? Maybe that fan belt they stole, that person, you know, had a heart attack and they couldn't get to the hospital and that person died. And that person was, you know, themselves, you know, a person who would have come up with a cure for cancer. We don't know. They could be the worst people in the whole thing, but no. They brought that kind of naivety, too, of a younger person. It's like, hey, yeah, we're going to do this little race across the country. It'll be awesome. It'll be fun. We got, you know, this nice Corvette. It'll be great.
I love that Corvette, actually. I shouldn't say they stole the belt, because they did leave $5 for the person with a misspelt note. So, you know, there is that. And so, yeah, these two are kind of the most innocent. Would you agree, Don, with that? They're the innocents of the movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, aside from the fact that they essentially stole her dad's car to go on this race.
Yeah.
But that's like that's
for the time, that was, you know, that was the thing. And that's the thing, for the time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they were definitely, and there was really a lot going on in the film, because, you know, we've touched on the musician, the radio star. We've touched on Robert Carradine and his character. When you really break it down, there is a lot going on in this movie, and not all of it makes sense. But, Mark, you're right. It is the innocence that gets rewarded in the end. And, you know,
that's not a bad thing necessarily.
No.
It's just an odd, a bit of an odd ending. It's not the ending you think they're going for.
This whole movie seems so cynical. and then at the end, you're like, and it's kind of like, you know, it's like, you know, you see, like, you know, well, I mean, it would be like if you, like, saw this horrible car pile up, but then after, at the end, like a little dove came out.
Well, and two, you get to the end, and Coy actually wins the race, but refuses to punch his ticket because he realizes that his brother has caused the death of his friend and caused the injury of his girlfriend. So he is, as soon as he makes sure he gets what he wanted, which was the contract for the racing,
right?
He doesn't care about the money, so he just, you know, lets his brother get his just rewards by refusing to win the race. And then, yeah.
Yeah. And then
there's a lot going on.
You're right. There is actually a lot going on. I think a little too much for the film, where you could have almost, you know, centered the film around any number of these characters and just fleshed them out more and forgot the rest. I liked the two characters in the vet, and I thought it was just interesting. They're just moseying along, and they end up winning. And you're right. David Carradine does get the contract and the girl. Coy does, but Coy's got to work on his movie kiss, because David, I know she was in bandages, but man, that final kiss that he did was. Wow, man, I'm like, yeah, that's
pure heat.
If you mean by heat as in an icy hot pack that you left in your glove.
I do.
The best. But, you know, they did have a bit of the budget in the cars. I really enjoyed the cars in here and the different variety that they had. I think storyline we missed really quick that I want to talk about before we get, because it was the one that surprised me the most, was the husband character, who kind of was actually the first winner, but not with the affair, the guy who had his little pickup truck and that. Don, what about that character? I mean, that just, you could have just cut them out, couldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. That was the ditzy blonde I was talking about at the beginning. You absolutely could have cut them out. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get what they were there for. Do you think, you know, I mean, because we've got some other aspects of people represented in here, but him, what, the adulterous husband?
The maybe? Cheater, yeah. The cheater? Essentially just the cheater, because he flew across, he flew his car across country.
Yeah.
Because nobody would have ever thought to check the mileage on that car. Obviously, because it was the little blonde woman that spoiled the secret. Oops, I left the champagne on the plane.
Cause she, you're right, though. She is the only ditzy character in here. Otherwise, I mean, we've got, you know, Coy's, out of the couple, Coy's parole officer slash girlfriend has more cojones than she he does, because she kicks some major ass in a fight scene in this. Glenn, what did you think of the female characters outside of Ditzy Blonde? Did you feel that they were stronger characters?
Somewhat. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have, I'm forgetting her name now, Coy's lady friend.
Linda?
Who, I mean, she caved real easy to being kidnapped, basically. And you know, just the, hey, you know, go ride with this guy instead. Really? You're like, you went out of your way to basically kidnap her, but then it's like, eh, go ride in that car. And I don't need you here. You bother me, kid. You bother me. and I mean, yeah, and then, yeah, Ditzy Blonde aside, I mean, you had the girls in the car, in the van, where you got the one who's all like, you know, rawr, you know, and the other ones who are kind of ditzy themselves.
Yeah.
Well, I, you know, and it's not like it's, you know, like a great step, you know, for womankind, don't get me wrong there, but you got Mary Voronoff, who's just awesome anyway. But the two women, if you look, they weren't dumb. They used their sexuality as a weapon. They used it first against the guy who was driving the loner car or whatever.
Boutel,
His name. They used it against him, and then they used it when they were stopped by the cops. You know, yes, there was like some loose sexuality going, but it was still on their terms.
They were totally the ones in control of that situation.
So there was never a case where they were being taken advantage of. They were always in control. Now, is this something that, you know, maybe, you know, Gloria Steinem's is going to go and say, slightly like, yep, them's my girls. No. But it's an exploitation film. But it was still kind of refreshing to see, especially in comparison even to a lot of other movies of the era, I would say. That's my personal take anyway.
Mm-hmm. No, that's the feel I kind of got too. Plus, I want the van the girls were driving, because in one of the actually moments that I found more amusing, in one of the scenes, folks, the girls motivate the cops to get in the back of their Chevy van, and that's all right by me. And
that one I liked.
That's going way back for some folks, but
yeah.
So the cops are back there, and they're towing the cop car behind the van, and I love this sequence, because Boutel, who'd been run off the road twice already by the van, finally decides to get his revenge, and he dumps three cans of spare gasoline that he had in his back seat into the cop car and lights it with, you know, those dang cigarette lighters are so hot. Just ignited that gasoline, and it blew the hell up. Yet that van was hardly scorched. Glenn,
it's American craftsmanship, man.
Glenn, what about that? Did you find that sequence at least somewhat entertaining? I thought there was more refreshing scene in there, but that van, wouldn't it have been dead as well? Or no?
I don't know. I mean, the car was behind it. I mean,
sure, they were driving away. So
yeah,
I just found it funny that it blew up, and then they stop and the cops get out. And I mean, that sequence I thought actually had a little thought into it. But I just wasn't too familiar with it. I just thought it was kind of odd that the van was still drivable. But then again, a couple of Coy's cars should have really never been driving again. And he seemed to still drive away with it. And I don't know what he plugged up his gasoline tank with either. Because he drove how far with a hole in his gas tank?
Yeah.
There are just some things with Coy. He was like the superhero here.
I'm going to guess, because if they were carrying, it was just a big wad of chest hair.
just show some chest hair in the gasoline tank. So.
Pretty much, I think.
Yeah. So, there's not a whole lot more I think you could say about this film. It's a car race car exploitation, or however you want to put it, film, exploitation. Its tone is all over the place. It does feel it, but there are some entertaining moments, and it is fun, especially if you're a fan or familiar at all with 70s exploitation films. You're going to recognize a lot of familiar faces in here who were in other films and go on to do other cult films in it, and it was the start of that trend. As Don mentioned, Death Race 2000, and then you had the Gumball Rally, this one, and then David Carradine would go on later, 2 years later, to do a sci-fi film. Was it a Death?
Death Sport. But there weren't a whole lot of cars in that. There were some really bad motorcycles. Mostly it was motorcycles and horses. They basically said, what was the thing people liked about Death Race 2000? The cars. Great. For the sequel, let's get rid of those. And on the commentary on the Death Sport DVD, I think one of the people who worked on it said, this is the worst movie that New World ever released, and that's saying something. I don't know if I'd go that far, but it's entertainingly bad, let's just say that.
Were you going to say something, Don?
No.
Oh, okay. I think we're going to wrap it up here on 1976 Cannonball. It was one of the films that was voted for, and I'm glad it was, because I've never actually seen it, and that was part of the reason why I did the voting, because I wanted to see, I was hoping to see some films I hadn't before during that era, and it is interesting, though I will say that, in all honesty, the film that spoofs it, Cannonball Run, did it better. Because they were. I enjoyed Cannonball Run anyway quite a bit. I watched it numerous times when I was a kid. At least it went all comedy with that one. Whether or not it was good comedy, as you can tell from Scott's reaction, is up for debate. And who knows? Maybe we'll talk about that on another episode. But hope you enjoyed this interesting film. If you've watched Cannonball or have any opinions on Cannonball, you can always leave us a comment on the email at spoilerroom.smp@gmail.com. Please rate and like us and subscribe to us on iTunes and also the Stitcher Radio, or you can find all the episodes on Special Mark Productions. This is going to be the moment where we get folks. I just want to get your final thought, just real quick, thought of your summary with Cannonball, who you would recommend it to, if anyone, and then also a pimp where they can find you at. So Don, go ahead and go first.
Cannonball, if you're a fan, if you have to see all the race movies, if you love Steve McQueen, you love things like, why did I just draw a blank on that movie? If you love Death Race, if you love Steve McQueen, if you love have to see everything race, watch this. Otherwise, you can skip it. otherwise, you can find me at intheaudience.net.
Were you thinking of Bullet?
That was one of them, but there was a different one I was thinking of too.
Lamaze? Sure.
No, it was older.
Let's just go down the list.
He was in Cars a lot.
Yes. McQueen was in Cars a lot.
We'll be here for a half an hour as we name every car movie that was made between 1960 and 1976. No, Glenn, how about you? Your just final thought or recommendation, if any, for this film, and where can they find you at?
I would absolutely recommend seeing Cannonball Run. Absolutely. You can find me On YouTube with Guy in the Bunker Productions and the Viewing Bunker. You can find me on Facebook, same things, or just follow me on Twitter at Guy in the Bunker.
Fantastic. And Scotty D, final thought, and your where they can find you at.
Well, you know, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And he got it. And so but yeah, there's so many car movies, especially in the 70s, like muscle cars and everything, like racing. It was so huge. So you had like metaphysical car movies like Vanishing Point and Two Lane Blacktop, which I think is just a brilliant movie. You know, you had more kind of things that were kind of more comedic and stuff like Gumball Rally and stuff like that and Eat My Dust. And then you had stuff that kind of was that line in between, like Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, and this. And if you like car movies, I would definitely recommend it. If you like exploitation films, I think it's worth a look. And if you like character actors, I think it's worth a look. I can't guarantee you'll like it. I mean, you don't know what you're getting with this movie. It switches tone so much. But if you're open to that kind of thing, I would definitely say it's at least worth a peek. I will warn, that one scene, though, even for me, hard to get around. But I still give it a recommendation.
Nice. And where can I find you at?
Oh, yeah, that thing. I have not updated it in, like, forever, but I suppose I should get around to doing that. So you can catch me at Moviocrity.com. You can also check out my web series, Moviocrity, which is on YouTube, but honestly, I recommend you catch it at Vimeo.com/channels/Moviocrity, because unlike YouTube, with their little restrictions and stuff, you can see all the episodes on Vimeo. So there it is.
Nice. And yes, YouTube, if you're listening to this and you have a problem with what we've said about Cannonball from 1976.
Sorry.
Yeah. I don't really care. You can take the monetization off of this, and I won't get that 38 cents. So I want to thank my panel here tonight. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about this interesting car film. September, I am working on the lineup. I'm hoping to get some suggestions possibly. Otherwise, we will definitely have a big 4-0, at least one more each month. We're wrapping up that list that we have. And just to give you a sneak peek, though, November, we're looking at mature animated films. So something to look forward to. Keep it here. Find us on Special Mark Productions, as I mentioned before, at the Twitters. You can find me at MovieManiac3D or follow Spoiler Room PDCS, where you can subscribe there and follow along as well as we release new episodes. I appreciate the support. And remember, with the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies. Let's ride out of here, folks. Say goodnight, everyone.
Goodnight, everyone.
Let's roll.